This podcast
is shareable. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this either is or will become your favorite podcast. This is shareable, the show that's so good, you got to tell someone about it. Every episode, we explore the impact of people and technology on our lives and careers, and we send you away with something shareable. Now, without further ado, let's get to it. What up, shareable listeners? Oh my God, today is such an exciting episode for me. My BFF, Mike Ganino, recommended that I speak with this individual that is on the episode today. And yo, she's incredible. Her name is Rachel K. Albers. So she describes herself as a marketer who hates marketing. She's the founder and creative director of RKA Inc., a branding, web design, and digital marketing studio based outside Chicago. She has helped hundreds of thought leaders and visionary entrepreneurs all over the world stand out online without selling their souls or playing the manipulation game. Her clients have used their online platforms to launch best-selling books, five-star podcasts, and six-figure funnels. And when she's not creating unforgettable brands for her clients, she's the host of Awkward Marketing, which is a business comedy show blending fun-sized small business advice with storytelling and sketch comedy. And it's for entrepreneurs who want to create epic, unforgettable brands online. It's really funny. You should totally check it out. It's on YouTube. Her characters are very, like, in the vein of, like, SNL and Second City and all that sort of stuff. She's been featured in Inc. Magazine, The Huffington Post, and a guest on podcasts like Make Your Money, Honey, Marketing in Yoga Pants, and The Entrepreneur Mastermind Show. And now she's been a guest on Shareable. So, whoo, add that as a feather to your hat. She lives in St. Charles, Illinois, with her husband, daughter, two troublemaking dogs, and a bunch of old computer cords that she's afraid to throw away. This episode of Shareable is exceptionally shareable. Welcome back to Shareable. It's me, Jeff, and I'm here with Rachel K. Albers. Rachel, who are you and what are you passionate about?
Jeff, first of all, I'm passionate about being here today. So we're off to a great start.
Yes, that's amazing. Listeners, real quick, before I let Rachel continue, this episode is going to be I anticipate it's going to be a little goofier than some of the more serious ones, because I'm just getting that vibe from you in like everything like that. And that's not to say that we're not going to have like total jewels and nuggets of brilliant wisdom, because you and I see eye to eye on so much stuff and we're going to talk about that. But I just feel like the banter is going to be great in this. So shareable listeners, this will be one of those. Rachel came to me by way of Mike Ganino, two-time guest and BFF of me, Jeff Gibbard. So now back to that. Okay. Answer it differently. Aside from being passionate here and talking to me, which is obviously fun, what's your other stuff? What's your thing?
I am a business comedian, and I am also the founder and lead designer at RKA Inc., which is a branding, design, and marketing studio. So I like to say, Jeff, that I'm like the one woman SNL of business comedy. But what I mean by that, ooh, my Chicago came out, so you can hear that I'm from the Second City. But what I mean by that, is that I host a show called Awkward Marketing, where I use sketch comedy and storytelling as a way of exploring how small business owners can create epic brands online. And we have a lot of fun. So that's my thing. And that's what I'm passionate about. And that's what I'm up to.
I absolutely love it. For the listeners out there, definitely go and check out Awkward Marketing TV. It is amazing. My favorite, I'll tell you, is it Brad the Bro?
Yes, Brad. It is. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh my God. That one. Absolutely. I shared it in our internal company Slack channel, and I will put it in the show notes. So don't leave the podcast and go looking for it. I swear I'll put it in the show notes. I thought that was so funny. I was sitting in my office with my headphones on, just like cracking up, and my CSs were like looking at me like, what's happening? Those are really, really good. I like that you're I want to appreciate you for a moment, because your show is funny. Like your YouTube channel, your characters, everything, all the sketch, it's really funny. But after you're done being funny, you say like really smart and insightful shit.
Well, my mom should be proud of me today. I've done one good thing in the world. And if so, hey, thank you.
Yeah, no, you crush it. You've got, you give very practical advice. I think you give very down to earth advice that's very realistic, right? Like, so I think one of the things that I appreciate about a lot of things I've noticed about your work is that you avoid a lot of BS and hyperbole and over the top nonsense, and you give it to people very straight. You're like, here's the real situation of it. You might hear people saying this, that is not true. Here's the real deal. So I really appreciate that about the work that you're doing there.
Thanks, man. That is the goal. So I'm glad that it's coming. You know what? My brand is landing the way I want it to. That's always the test of whether you're doing branding right. And that's kind of been the point of it. And I'll say this. I feel like it's really trendy to complain about sleazy marketing and bro marketing, Brad the braggy bro marketers, and just, you know, but I'm tired of that. I'm tired of complaining about that stuff. And so I like to take the crap that makes me angry and that makes my audience angry and frustrated and stressed and confused and turn it into teachables. And so instead of just whining about it, I bring those funny slash cringeworthy situations to life, you know, and then let's explore what we should do instead. Because as I said, complaining gets really old. It's like it's been done, and it's been done better than all of us. There's always someone that's better at complaining than we are. So let's try something else.
It's so easy to be a hater, though. Like, how do you channel? This is a lesson for me right now. Like, how do you do that? Like, how do you challenge yourself to take that and turn it into a teachable moment while not just crapping all over the thing that you're making fun of? I made a video about Gary Vee once, not like a full one, but like I just was kind of parodying him, like at the time where he was super at the height of his Snapchat usage. And it was like every morning I'd wake up and he would get on, he'd be like, "Hey everybody, get up. It's time to hustle. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm walking my dog. I'm at the gym." And like, he would just like mumble and grumble and yell. So I made a couple short videos about that and called myself Jeffy G. But I find myself, it's like, it's not coming from a place of like humor and like, let me instruct after that, which I think you do so well. It was more of like just being like butthurt about it and not being cool. So how do you do that? How do you keep yourself like turning these into happy lessons instead of letting the world of marketing douchebaggery get you down?
It's such a good question. So there's always that two-parter, because obviously part one is you find yourself ranting. I find myself angry. I'm like striking up a Voxer chat with a friend being like, "This is garbage." But, and this is kind of at the heart of what I call reverse niching. So when I help people figure out their brands, their brand values, their ideal client, oftentimes that can be really challenging for people. You know, just asking them, "So who do you serve?" And they're like, deep down, all of us kind of, you know, feel like we could really serve anybody, right? So that's a hard question for people to answer. So the way I'll take people through the back door of that question and that of niching down their business and getting really clear with their messaging and their content and their copy is by asking them what they're absolutely against. So like, who, for example, would you absolutely never work with? And what about your industry makes you super pissed off? And what are other people refusing to acknowledge or they're not talking about? And this ends up being an easier way sometimes to go about niching. And so what I say when I'm helping my clients through like the reverse niching exercises is, wait a minute, I just lost my train. I don't know what I say. I just say whatever I say. And then I, but what I say is whenever you find yourself getting worked up, like you said about the Gary Vee stuff, like the getting up on, you know, getting on Snapchat and being like, "Hey, it's 5 a.m. Are you ready to hustle?" is when you feel yourself getting worked up about something like that, that is a signal. It's like a little ding, ding, ding. It's a bell ringing saying, "Ooh, I've just hit upon one of my brand values. I've just hit upon something that is really important to me about how I want to do business, about how I want my brand to show up in the world, about how I want to relate to my customer." And so, you know, you take that thing that you're really against, and that is a signal that you just hit upon something in your business that you're for. You know, it's like this reverse psychology, a way of approaching your marketing and your brand. And so when I see something that makes me mad and pisses me off and it gets me all like hot and bothered, I'm like, okay, what brand value or what core part of how I, you know, see business and want to do business is this signaling to me? And that's kind of how I work my way into the teachable around whatever that thing is that's pissing me off. Because things that piss us off are fun to rant about in the moment, but then super boring for whoever's receiving that rant. So how can I turn this into something that, you know, is a dialogue and is contributing something helpful to the planet instead of just more angry garbage? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of like this idea of backing yourself into the thing that's actually really important there. So the thing that you're reacting negatively against is kind of a clue towards finding the thing that you truly value. I really like that approach. And it actually aligns with something I said many moons ago about Facebook and how they should have a dislike button. And the reason I think you should have a dislike button, just like there's a dislike button on YouTube and one on Reddit or a vote down button, is I think we identify as much with the things that we dislike and the things that we hate and that we feel strongly about negatively as the things that we really like. But there was like that whole theory of like, well, we don't want to make the platform negative. And I was like, well, have you been on social media? Anyway, I digress. The point being is that I think that's a really interesting, way to approach it, where you say kind of, you know, who are the businesses that you really despise and you don't want to be like? It's an easier way than trying to get people to put together their lofty mission statement or vision, values, yes, and goals. You could probably make it a little easier by just saying like, well, what do you hate? Because we can all rant about stuff and talk about what we dislike. And then the antithesis of that should be what we really value, right?
Exactly. So you brought up Brad, the braggy bro. Brad Brosakis is his full name, Bradley Brosakis. And I like to say he's kind of like my marketing alter ego. He's my arch nemesis. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I'm getting stuck, and this is how I teach people, part of the reverse niching is I'll teach them to create their own awkward marketer, their own marketing or business arch nemesis to help them when, you're writing a social media post, you're creating an email for your list, you're putting together copy for a sales page. And if you're getting stuck or you're having a hard time getting clear and specific and creating marketing content that really resonates, you can go to that alter ego. You can go to that arch nemesis and kind of channel them for a little bit and get into their, you know, headspace and think, okay, what is the opposite of what Brad would do? That's what I need to do right now. And it really can unlock and open up those doors. Just like you said, sometimes it can hard to be like, what's your vision? Where are you going to be in 5 years? I don't know. But if you tell somebody like, will you absolutely positively never write in your sales copy? You can get them riffing real fast, and then they can kind of reverse engineer that into stuff that really resonates. And as you said, we really identify as humans, we identify as much with what we don't believe in as what we do believe in. So I agree with you. I think there is a place. Well, now at least Facebook has like the angry face. You can respond to things with the angry face. And that's like the dislike button as far as you can, you know, with Facebook.
Yeah, it's the closest thing I think that we have.
I'll take it. I like that little angry face. There's a lot of places for it.
I think it totally works. I wrote a post back in the day. I used to have a blog called Social Media Philanthropy, and I've since moved the post over to jeffgibber.com, but it was called How to Be the Best Ever at Social Medias with a Z at the end. And it was by Dr. Social Media. And it was like, it was everything that was like the worst people in social media. So I've unconsciously been doing that, but I'm gonna have to kind of formalize it a little bit more. I want to ask you about some of the ways that you seem like a bevy of skills, and I don't know what things that you do versus what things that you work with other people on or what things you outsource or subcontract, but my assumption is just that you are like a jack of every trade and master of them, because looking at your videos, I mean, you're doing makeup, you're doing costuming, you're doing, it looks like there's, you know, you've got video and audio and all these different things that are happening in there. Are you doing all of your own video editing on those videos?
Guilty as charged. Yes. When it comes to awkward marketing, I am doing my own editing, mostly because there's so much footage and there's so much comic timing that is super hard to outsource. Now, if I'm putting together a video marketing campaign for a client and they're creative, we're bringing in video production experts to do that. But with awkward marketing, so much of it is comic timing. To have someone else edit that for me, they themselves need to be, you know, of the comic persuasion. And that's a hard spot to fill. And with as much content as I'm creating, that's expensive. So it's me, boo. It's me.
Rocking. So are you like a technology fluent person? Like if you had to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, yourself?
Yes. That's also a byproduct of being a millennial. I think we were talking about getting our participation trophies. So, you know, born and raised on tech and pretty tech fluent and have the confidence that if I don't know how to do it, there's a tutorial on YouTube about it. You know what I'm saying? I'll figure it out.
Right on. And I assume that you're also one to consistently be looking for how to push that forward, find new things that save you time or make things more efficient. I know you're already a fan of batch processing, which I talk about all the time, as well as content repurposing, both things that came from one of your videos that I saw. And I was like, oh, kindred spirit.
I love it. Yep. I'm all about batching. And yeah, of course, I'm always looking for new technology, but I'll say that with an asterisk because it's like, I think that oftentimes we can get into a place where we're always trying to we get shiny object syndrome when it comes to our tools and we hear about somebody's using this or that tool and maybe I should switch to that. And I'm also just a fan of like using what works and sticking with it. And I've got some of my video production processes down to a science to a, you know, a certain degree. And so I also try to keep myself from using that as a form of procrastination or brand procrastination, as I like to say, because, you know, looking for the newest tool can sometimes be a way of holding yourself back or keeping yourself from moving forward when what you really need to do is keep your head down and keep doing the way you've figured out works best. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. No, I totally dig. I dig that entire train of thought about it. Why let the tool dictate it? Instead, think about, I wrote a post called We Don't Need More Hammers, We Need Better Carpenters. Because I think that kind of to that point, it's, you know, the tool isn't the thing that's going to make you good at anything. Just because you have the ability to record in 4K doesn't mean the video is worth watching. So it really does come down to like, what's the strategy and idea behind it? So I think we're locked in on that one.
Yes, exactly. And whenever I've got an awkward marketing episode about this, you know, finding the perfect tool, and everybody's really passionate about the tools they use, and they'll sometimes try to force them onto you. They'll be like, oh no, you got to be using this for your blank or whatever. And for me, it's like, no, it's not tool first, it's workflow first and systems first. Create the system, create the workflow, and then plug the right tool into it. And then that'll help you determine if you do need to upgrade your tool. Because if you've got your workflow mapped out really precisely and something else comes on the market that's going to save you a few steps that you're doing now, then you are going to be able to really easily make an educated decision about whether that tool in that tech is worth exploring and baiting and playing with. But if you're just kind of, you know, I have clients come to me all the time. They're like, what should I do for my CRM? Or what should I do for my blank? And it's like, well, tell me exactly how you want to use it first, because I can't just answer that question without having a whole process behind it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably also just something to look out for is if you're ever dealing with somebody and they have the answer before they've asked you any questions, then they're probably not the right solution for you.
Ding, 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 ding. I knew we were going to be like brothers from another mother. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, I want to know more about you in that sense. So the show Shareable is about the impact that people and technology have on every human being. And I'm curious, since you are cut from your own original piece of cloth, like you are definitely not like any other marketer I think I've ever encountered. I've encountered a number of marketers that are funny, who have a sense of humor, who have a way of delivering, you know, their concepts in simple, straightforward, easy ways, you know, easy to follow kind of ways and with a little bit of humor, but you are undoubtedly a unique one of a kind. So I am curious, where did you come from? Tell me about the impact of the people in your life that have helped create this Rachel, this you who does what you do. Were your parents like zany and funny? Were you always doing impressions? Did you actually go to Second City? Like, talk to me a little bit about like, who are some of the influences that helped to create the way you do your things in marketing?
Well, I was born, I'm kidding. yeah, growing up, well, I'll tell you this. I was the kid at recess when everybody else was on the playground. I would stay in to like play on the little Macintosh computers. And, you know, my idea of a good time was like word processing and writing like a book of poetry on the computer. Like, you know, back in the days of floppy disks, I came of age with the internet. you know, I was about 12, 13 when we first got dial up in our home. And so that certainly affected, you know, how I interacted with the world around me, right? Because I was growing up as computers were growing up and as the internet was growing up. And so I was using those tools to figure out who I was in this world. Like when I was 15, I got grounded for the summer. That's the best thing my parents ever did, was, you know, not let me do anything for a summer. I don't even know, something to do with a boyfriend. So I was grounded for the summer and I taught myself to code. I taught myself HTML back when that was all there was. And little did I know that I was kind of planting the seeds for one day running a digital marketing agency and being a web designer and developer. And I was always a theater kid. So it took a long time for those two things to come together, for like the coding tech side of me to converge with the theater side of me. I've been performing since I was a little kid. Over the years, slowly but surely, these different talents and gifts kind of, you know, started slouching towards each other until over the last few years, they've kind of all come together. So yeah, I'm a child of the internet. And now I gotta be real with you. I'm like really scared about this new generation of like toddlers who know how to make YouTube videos. Hopefully one day they'll still have a job for someone like me, you know, when they take over. So.
Well, I think there's going to be something for people in our generation that grew up with the early internet, but we were still young enough where it was, you know, an early part of our development. I call us the bridge generation. So I'm like at the very, very tail end of millennial, but I've always found that I have an ability to talk to people that are older than me that aren't quite as fluent with technology. And I'm able to kind of walk them through getting more familiar with it, while at the same time being able to talk to the generation that's much younger and be tech fluent with them. Maybe not to the degree that, you know, some of the newest up and comers are going to be fluent with technology, but I think there's a connective tissue that we bring to the world that hopefully won't go out of style too quickly.
I feel so grateful to remember what life was like before we were all connected, to remember what life was like was before a smartphone, to have had an analog childhood to a degree. So I agree with you. Yeah, I really resonate and connect to a lot of my clients are in that space of trying to figure out how to leverage digital tools and they don't want to feel like idiots about it. And so I feel certainly that that's an asset and a talent that our generation has of being able to be a bridge for sure.
So you said that, you know, during recess you would sit in and write poetry and that you had kind of like theater kid aspirations and, you know, all of these different ways that you were. How did that happen? I mean, was that just like your natural proclivity was to just be kind of maybe on your own and like learning how to do all this kind of stuff? Or was there any sort of an external influence on you that kind of helped to cultivate that side of your personality or those particular interests? Like my parents, my mom particularly was really into computers. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I got into computers when I was younger is that it was around. She would teach me. I thought it was kind of cool. So I did it. And then as far as being, you know, like being an extrovert and being a class clown and doing like voices and impressions and things like that, it was because, you know, my parents, we'd watch a lot of movies and my parents would crack up when I would imitate what was on the TV. So then I just kind of, it was like positive reinforcement that caused me to keep doing those things. So I got good at doing voices and impressions and characters and things like that. So that's kind of what my story was. I'm curious because I see a lot of the same things in how you present yourself to the world and my experience of talking with you. You know, what was your experience like that kind of made you this way and caused you to kind of follow the paths that you did?
Well, you know, my dad is a lawyer. My mom's an accountant. And so certainly they present as a little bit more buttoned up, not really tech people, but I'll tell you this. I self-identified from a very young age as being an iconoclast. I liked being different. So I liked the fact that I wasn't like my parents and I liked the fact that I wasn't like the other kids at school. And I think that is what pushed me into the theater realm. I self-identified as an activist at a really young age. I don't even know where that come from. Nobody knows. My mom's still crying about it somewhere. She's like, why can't you just be a good Republican, you know? So I think it really was that there was something exhilarating to me about going against the grain. And that's part of really, I think, a big thing that shaped me. Now, I will say, much like this participation trophy generation that I feel like I am a part of, you know, I came of age with the message that you can be anything, you can do anything, and try it out and go for it. And I remember as a child, you know, I'd be writing like a play, or I'd be writing like a little, I was always illustrating little books. And my dad's like, hey, finish that book. We're going to take you to a publisher. You're going to get published. So I had this idea, really, this feeling very young, this feeling of personal efficacy that whatever I wanted to do, I could do. He's like, hey, let's get some pictures. Let's get you an agent. You're going to be an actor. You want to do it? Let's do it. You know? So that really definitely shaped me. I don't come from a particularly like zany family, but as I say, I like to joke and say I'm like the one woman SNL of business comedy. I did watch a lot of late night TV with my dad, much to my mother's chagrin. And I think that definitely shaped, you know, in terms of my comedic influences. And, but yeah, I just like being different, Jeff.
So how's that working for you in business? You know, you do take an atypical approach, definitely against the grain. So success there, check off that box. I'd imagine that the type of people and brands and companies that want to work with you, they just have to be the right kind of fit because you have a particular style. I think your advice in everything that I've seen is spot on. Like, you clearly know what you're doing. So the content of what you do is undoubtedly like on point. Your delivery is definitely unique. So how has that ever come to a point where it's hurt you in your zaniness, or has it all been for the most part a positive thing? Talk to me a little bit about how, you know, approaching business with this very like blaringly authentic and, you know, out loud kind of way has impacted your career.
Well, anytime you have a strong opinion about something, you're going to have hate, you're going to have haters, and you're going to have enthusiastic fans. Now that's the only way to create a brand. That's how I teach my clients to create their own brands. If you're trying to be middle of the road, don't upset anybody, don't ruffle any feathers, well, you're forgettable. So I like to say I help my clients create epic, unforgettable brands. And so having an opinion, standing up for your brand values and being rooted in them is how you create an emotional connection with your ideal client, right? It's also, you know, going back to that idea of reverse niching and figuring out what you're for by starting with what you're against, it's also what helps you push away the wrong people so that you're not wasting your time on them. You're not wasting your ad dollars on them. You're not wasting, you know, if you're a service provider, you're not wasting sales calls on the wrong fit. But you know what, I'll tell you, it took me some time to get to a place where I was so rooted in my brand values. I did a lot of dithering to get here. And years ago, I'll tell you this. So my brand and web design agency used to be called, my tagline used to be web design with heart. That was my tagline. And that was at a period of time in my life where I was trying to just, you know, I wanted to please people. I wanted to please other, you know, I wanted to attract a ton of different clients. And that is what hurt me, Jeff, is by trying to be something I wasn't, which was watering down my strong beliefs and hiding the iconoclastic, radical, in your face part of myself. That's when I started to attract so many of the wrong clients that bled me of my time and my money, that were just wrong fits, where they weren't happy with the outcome. They weren't happy with working with me. So it's become better since I've gotten more rooted in what my brand is all about and what I'm not about. But of course there are people that don't like me as a result of it. And that, you know, and there are doors that are shut in my face because I dare to do what I do the way I do it. And yet there's no other way that you can be if you're really trying to build a brand and build a business and create an audience and attract the right people and repel the wrong ones. So, you know, the pain is part of the journey, you know?
Words we can all live by.
This really quickly devolved into being like something you cross stitch onto a pillow, but you know, yeah, what I'm saying.
There are no, it's just a happy little accident. We're going all Bob Ross on it. So what is exactly not to put you in a box, but if you were, because when I look at your work online, you're touching a lot of different areas. So you're clearly in online marketing, but it seems as though you have interests and insights that extend beyond just online marketing and into areas of brand and potentially how you carry yourself offline and all of these other different things. And then within the online marketing space, there's such a wide variety of different things that you could do. And you have a background in code from your early age of learning HTML. And then there's social media and there's content marketing and there's SEO. Kind of where would you place your flag if you had to put it somewhere? And then, you know, I guess draw circles around it to extend into the other areas where you feel like you have expertise and value to offer.
Well, I like to say that I help small businesses create epic, unforgettable brands online. But that, as you just highlighted, there's a lot of ways that that could actually break down into, okay, what does that really mean, Rachel? So what I do and what my company does is we do brand design, and web development. When people come to us, those are the things they're coming to us for. But what makes our approach to those things different is that it's always in the context of your business plan, your marketing strategy. So we advise and we help our clients strategize when they're creating, like they're doing a visual rebrand, they're creating a new website. We're advising and helping them to strengthen the underlying business foundations that go underneath that rebrand, as well as the marketing strategy that goes alongside that rebrand. Because as you know, a website, and because you do, you know, very similar work, a website doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's not like I've got my website over here in one side of the universe, and then the other side of the universe is my social media and my email marketing and my ads. They all work together. So it's important that I have a variety of skills and that I'm savvy about all these different areas of not just online marketing, but business and content. But at the end of the day, the deliverables I'm producing with and for my clients are brand design, web development, copywriting for their website funnels and all that kind of stuff. That's the core of what we're delivering and creating for and with our clients.
So there's a conversation I have now and again in marketing with various people that I come across that are in the industry. And I guess the conversation title I generally call "Who Got to You First?" And it's a conversation I often have with a friend of mine, John Steyert, who was my first hire in my company. And we talk about the critical influences we've had as we've developed in the industry of social media marketing. And we kind of point to like, well, who are the people that influence you? So, you know, there are people that are of like the Grant Cardone school of thought, right? There's people that are Gary Vaynerchuk disciples. There are people that follow Seth Godin. There are people that follow Mitch Joel or Jay Baer. There are all these different marketing and business influences. And they help to shape and kind of identify, you know, what's the philosophy that guides you, right? It's sort of like, it's almost religion to a certain extent. So in the world of marketing, what are the influences that you kind of look at and say, well, I'm kind of in, I know you're your own category of one in many ways, but if you were to think about pitching yourself like you would a Hollywood, like you're pitching a movie to a Hollywood exec, what are the kind of the influences that you think make up your perspective on how to approach marketing?
Well, one of my faves is Ash Amberger of the Middle Finger Project. She is just incredible. And it probably doesn't surprise you with a name like brand name like that, that I would self-identify as in her camp. She's got a book coming out, I think, in the next year from Penguin Random House. So she's about to become a household name. But yeah, Ash Amberger, for sure. I would you mentioned Jay Baer, and I think especially with his most recent platform with Talk Triggers, that certainly I align myself with that kind of approach to marketing. And I'll tell you what, it shouldn't be a surprise as well that some of my greatest influences are, and I'm not going to name names here necessarily, but are the folks that are doing things, in my opinion, either the wrong way or the manipulative way, the sleazy way. And so I'll tell you a story. When I first got into the online marketing world, I lived in Mexico for 8 years, and I started my business while living in Mexico. And in fact, the goal of my business at that time wasn't like, oh, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a business owner. It was more like, I was doing nonprofit work with young women and girls in Mexico using theater as a tool for community education and all this kind of stuff. And so my business was a means to an end. It was, how do I continue to do this work and not go home and not also take a job from someone in the local economy? So I'm going to start a business because I've got marketing background. I've got a creative background. I've got coding, you know, skills, all this stuff. And so, you know, speaking of being an outsider or an iconoclast going against the grain, I kind of came into the online marketing world with a healthy dose of skepticism. I wasn't, you know, a disciple of some of these guys that have been around since the beginning of online marketing. I was more like a cynical observer. And especially because I was living in Mexico, I wasn't in the States. It kind of felt like I was on the outside of the fishbowl looking in. And I had a client in the early, early days of my business that was like, she schooled me really in all of these people that now are considered kind of mainstays or like the godfathers / godmothers of the online marketing industrial complex. She was like, read this guy's book. He's going to be the next big thing. And follow this person and, you know, join their email list. And I want a squeeze page like they have a squeeze page. And I want a funnel like their funnel. And so I studied all these people, not because I necessarily thought they were amazing, but because I had this client that was like, here are, and ultimately she was correct. Every person that she had me study is now one of the big names, you know, imagine a name in the online marketing industry. I followed that person from the very beginning, right? And they really shaped my perspective on marketing for better or worse. And so now, you know, that I have Awkward Marketing, I've got my show where I kind of make fun of some of the worst offenders. And then through that, teach my clients how they can do things differently, how they do not have to necessarily replicate the steps that everyone tells them they have to. It's largely shaped. My perspective is largely shaped based on these, you know, these big names who, for better or worse, have really, you know, created the rules, quote unquote, for how you market online. So, you know, Ash is someone I can name drop and with love, Jay Bear, Marie Forleo, but there's some other names that I won't name that I don't love them. I love to hate them, and they've made me a better marketer because they've taught me what I'm about through what I'm not about, you know?
We're totally, when we press stop on the record, you and I are totally just going to quickly go through that just for fun.
Okay. I'm into it.
Just for fun. I gotta know. Well, I want to ask you one kind of like closing question about, you know, your career and how you've gotten here and everything. And, it sounds like you have a lot of fun in what you do. And it sounds like there was that pivotal moment where you kind of stopped doing what you thought you should do and started doing what you really should do. When you switched from like the web design with heart over to, you know, creating the epic brands. But if you could look back on your career and go back and teach yourself a big lesson that you wish you could have learned earlier in your career, what would that have been?
Oh my gosh, it's going to be so boring, but I would have started building my list sooner. That's always the advice I wish I could go back 10 years ago and tell myself, like, build your dang email list, girl. What were you thinking?
That is not bad advice at all. That's a really, I don't know however many episodes we are in at this point, 80 something, but like nobody has given an answer quite like that. That is the first. That's a very practical, straightforward answer. And it's great advice because we all know how important an email list can be. So don't be ashamed of that answer. Wow. I appreciate that.
I'm loud and proud. Build that list, boo.
That's amazing. All right. Well, I want to take into shareables, which are our rapid fire section where I ask you about a bunch of different stuff that you would recommend, and then they get shared. And isn't that great? Ready?
Yes.
What's one book every person should read?
Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller.
It's a good one. What's your favorite podcast?
Online Marketing Made Easy with Amy Porterfield.
Another good one. What's one application, mobile or desktop, that everyone should go and download and use?
The podcast app. I mean, that's boring, but Stitcher. Get those podcasts in your earbuds.
Nice. What is the most important skill of the future?
Emotional intelligence / empathy, practicing compassion.
Awesome. Empathy is the number one answer for that question. If you could have one superpower, what would it be? And it can't be one that you already have. And it can either be a superpower or an entire superhero or supervillain's superpower set.
So it can't be like being invisible?
No, that's fine.
All right, I'll do that.
Being invisible? It's an interesting one. Reading into you. All right, final question. What is one thing everybody listening to this episode should go and do today? It has to be something that they can go and do today. Start, finish, the whole thing today. What should it be?
I would say go watch my episode of Awkward Marketing about being on the Maury Povich show, and then do my exercise on reverse niching. It's super easy. You can do it in 10 minutes. It's all about getting more clear about your brand message by, as we've been talking about today, backing in through what you're against. It's really fun. And who doesn't want to watch an episode about Maury Povich? I mean, it's hilarious. So do that.
You are the father.
You're close. It's close.
That's awesome. Well, tell people where they can go and be social with you, learn more about you, watch your videos, get involved with all the cool stuff you're doing, download free stuff or paid stuff. Tell them about it.
I am RKAINK, RKA Inc. on all social media platforms. So if you want to find me, you can find me there. You can chat, you can binge watch Awkward Marketing at awkwardmarketing.com or go to RKAINK.com. Be my friend. I love new people in my life. Reach out, Instagram me, Facebook me, whatever your poison.
Hit me on the gram. Well, you and I are now best friends for sure.
Mike's gonna be jealous. Thought, you know, but that's okay.
He's totally gonna be jealous once he listens to this. It was great having you on the show. I thought everything about this was great. I think you have a lot of great advice about backing into, finding your niche and all sorts of other things that we covered during this episode. So I guess I would say if I had to describe this episode in one word, it would be shareable.
Wait, the show's not over yet. I have some important announcements. If you made it this far, you're clearly a dedicated fan, or you're in the middle of vacuuming and just haven't hit stop on your podcasting app. Whatever the case, we want to thank you. We're not just music to your ears, we're music to your inbox. If you subscribe to our email list at shareablepodcast.com/subscribe, not only will you get access to our private Facebook group, you'll also get all of our blog posts, newsletters, special announcements, and more. You won't find any of that in your podcast feed. You can follow the show at shareable_pod on Twitter and just shareable podcast on everything else. You can find Jeff online at jeffgibber.com, and you can connect with me on Twitter at Caroline Sohn because I don't have a website yet. So go ahead, call us, leave a message, subscribe to our list, leave a rating, review us on iTunes, tell a friend, tell your mom. If she's like my mom, she'll love it. And now for the thank you portion to all the folks that make this podcast possible. Shout out to DJ Quads for the use of our theme song Always and Ahimitsu for the use of our outro song Adventures. And a big thank you to Ray Bueno for all of that sexy production value.